Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Each week, I'll take you on a dark journey through terrifying true urban legends, bizarre true crime cases, chilling tales of backwoods horror, and more. So if you're looking to join a passionate community of the darkly curious, check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, stay curious.
This is a choice. This is Battleground America. Here's Tara Servatius.
Folks, this was one of our most insane weeks yet. And that is saying something. The week began with another totally preventable and completely inexcusable assassination attempt against Donald Trump, with Democrats saying, "Who, us?" What violent rhetoric. We ended the week with the Democrats putting up their first ever violent Antifa super soldier who is training for violent armed revolution as their U.S. Senate candidate in Maine. As they tell us, they don't endorse violence at all. Oh, and the guy's a Nazi too. We'll get to that in a minute. Folks, everything you need to know about the full homicidal horror that is the Democrat Party can be captured in what just happened in Maine, where Democrat Governor of Maine, Janet Mills, just dropped out of the Democrat primary for U.S. Senate because her opponent, Nazi Graham Plattner, just breached 60% in polling. He's been gradually ticking up for months, despite Democrats on CNN predicting, well, now that he's had the Nazi tattoo scandal and the racism scandal and identified himself, I'm not kidding, his words, not mine, as a communist, he's not going to get the upper hand, they told us. He did. She just dropped out. There's no way forward for her. What is amazing here, folks, is that Democrats, Chuck Schumer, the old guard, spent $4 million trying to stop a Nazi. He has a Nazi tattoo, folks, an SS Waffen death's head on his body. He said, well, he had PTSD and he didn't really even know what he was doing. He didn't know it was a Nazi tattoo. After that, his own campaign manager came out and said, yes, he did. He's always known it was a Nazi tattoo. And then posts of his from the past indicate, yes, he absolutely did know it was a Nazi tattoo. He at least knew what the sign was that he had tattooed on his body. Here's the fascinating part about this, okay? Democrats spent $4 million trying to educate people, Democrat voters in the primary in Maine, about this guy. They went through his black racist statements. They went through his pro-Hamas statements. He's an anti-Semite, by the way. Praised Hamas soldiers, foot soldiers, for killing Israeli soldiers. And after educating the lunatic Democrat base there in Maine with this campaign, after them learning he's a Nazi, you know what happened? He only got more popular. Folks, how does somebody walk around with the official SS death head tattooed on their body for 20 years and not notice? Nobody said, hey, I've seen that in a movie. Isn't that the Nazi thing? He knew because he's a Nazi. Why would Democrat voters who are routinely told that Trump is a Nazi nominate an actual Nazi in Maine? Overlook racism and racist comments about black people? After the Nazi tattoo controversy came out about Plattner, he did dip in the polls, but recovered in grand style. How? The answer will tell you everything you need to know about just how violent, how homicidal the Democrat base is becoming. They love Graham Plattner for three reasons. Number one, he marketed himself as an Antifa super soldier, quote unquote. His words, not mine. A communist who is a member of the Maine Socialist Rifle Club. The Maine Socialist Rifle Club bills itself, their words, not mine, as doing gun training for, quote, violent revolution, unquote. He wasn't just a member. He's a self-described recruiter. And as I said a minute ago, an Antifa super soldier. He brags that his three tours as a U.S. Marine have prepared him for this warfare. And he is vowing to completely destroy the American system. Openly, he said it. Number two is that he's an open communist and he's not hiding it. This is clearly what the Democrat base wants to hear. Violent, open communist / socialist. But here's the scariest part, folks, because I can't seem to do a podcast anymore every week without mentioning Hassan Piker. You know, the guy who on last week's podcast, which I recorded on Friday before the assassination attempt, I was talking about the New York Times not only platforming Hassan Piker after he openly lauded assassinating Donald Trump, but he then went on the New York Times podcast and justified the concept of social murder and praised Luigi Mangione for committing murder. And the New York Times published the podcast. Folks, it's still up, by the way. They haven't taken it down. By the way, a new Hassan Piker quote from 2025, when he was campaigning with the lead Democrat Senate candidate in Michigan, El Said, has resurfaced. He's talking about the day that he and El Said had together. He's lifting weights as he's doing this interview.
What a day. What a productive day. Talked about Trump. Talked about Trump potentially dying. Did a speech at the Palestine People's Conference. Now we're out here with Senate hopeful Dr. Abdul El Sayed getting the lift in. About to eat some kebabs. Excellent.
If a Republican podcaster recorded that exact video after campaigning with a Republican Senate candidate about Joe Biden, their doors would have been kicked in 48 hours. Probably more like 24, but let's say 48. You and I both know it. But why do I bring up Hassan Piker? Because Piker has vaulted three candidates into the lead in polling now by campaigning with them after regularly, and it's part of his shtick on his podcast, including on the New York Times podcast, calling for the murder of Trump supporters, capitalists, and anyone who doesn't support his violent version of Marxism. He first campaigned with Mamdani, the guy who's now the New York mayor. Remember, that was a big, crowded field full of perfectly suitable Democrat lunatics. But Mamdani and Piker were friends, and Piker campaigned with him and featured him on his podcast. It's what vaulted Mamdani to the front. Same with El Said, who's now endorsed by Gretchen Whitmer. He's now polling in first place. Why? Campaigning with the murder guy. With Hassan Piker. Now, I want to remind you, that's when he's doing a formal interview, okay? I want to remind you what he sounds like on his podcast.
People that they can afford housing in Berkeley, I don't know how that works.
My understanding is that the property owners who have properties there choose just not to rent it at all.
Yeah, kill them. Kill those motherfuckers. Murder those motherfuckers in the street. Let the streets soak in their red capitalist bloods, dude.
Of course, when he's talking publicly about murdering Donald Trump, he likes to put it a little less violently.
And you actually wrote about this, and it was a great video where you talked about, you know, someone has to do it. See, when I say that, everyone knows exactly what I mean. That which is, I think that shows that there's a lot of anger, a lot of resentment, and untapped potential. Untapped revolutionary potential, as a matter of fact, and it's a great opportunity for organizing it.
Yeah, so he's building a movement around the idea of violent Marxist revolution because somebody has to kill Trump. But what makes this popular podcaster so terrifying is he's now a kingmaker. He made Mamdani in a crowded primary, same with El Said, and now he's done it with Graham Platner, who he also campaigned with, featured prominently on his podcast, and endorsed. It finished off the Democrat old guard. Folks, how do we have people like this in our country? It is going to be incredibly violent. Now, let's remind ourselves how we got here. Democrat Party registration's been shrinking, and Democrats have never been the best at turning out their deadbeats, at least compared to us in voter turnout. So the Democrat leadership whipped them into a frenzy with all kinds of rhetoric about Republicans are Nazis, you're living through Nazi takeover, fascist regime, fascist revolution, blah, blah, blah. Well, they radicalized their base, and now they're terrified of it. Governor Tim Walz, who insisted that Elon Musk was a Nazi for making something like a Nazi symbol sign, I mean, when he was talking, he wasn't making a Nazi sign, but whatever. Yeah, Tim Walz blasted him for that, has called Trump a Nazi. Guess who is campaigning with Graham Plattner tomorrow? Yep, Tim Walz. Listen to this. Here's Elizabeth Warren, who's also campaigned with and endorsed Graham Plattner.
I did want to ask you, Senator Warren, about something else that happened last weekend, which is you campaigned with Graham Plattner, who is ahead of that state's very pivotal Democratic primary. And I wanted to ask you about something you said. You said he's your kind of man. And I've interviewed you for a long time and watched your hearings and listened to your questions. You care about character. This is a guy that had a chest tattoo with a Nazi symbol. Okay, he apologized for it. It's a guy that reportedly wrote that people concerned about rape should take some responsibility for themselves and not get so effed up that they wind up having sex with someone they don't mean to. He praised military tactics used by Hamas, reportedly, in comments online and Reddit when they were murdering Israeli soldiers. So I'm just curious why you think he's your kind of man.
So, as you rightly point out, he has apologized. He's out meeting with the people of Maine every single day.
If I hear another Democrat call Donald Trump a Nazi or a fascist, I'm going to lose my darn mind. But she's not the only one. Listen to the casualness here. This is Democrat Senator Chris Van Hollen.
He had a Nazi tattoo. I mean, let's be clear about what's going on here. I mean, is that, how do you view that? I mean, it seems to be at least somewhat disqualifying and traditional.
Certainly historically.
So look, I mean, let's take a couple issues, including the comments he's made in the past. I mean, he's been very clear that he went into combat on behalf of the United States. He went through a really rough period,
yeah,
PTSD type period. And he has himself said there are lots of things he's done and said that he completely regrets.
Yep.
And I do believe people should have second chances and that people can learn from their mistakes. And I think he's been doing that.
Folks, what are we watching? And the sooner we frame it this way, but we could use this to win the midterms. We won't, because we have no message or organization of any kind. We don't have a war room. And every week they hand us the thing that we could use to win the new, you know, the midterms, but then only Trump messages and then only occasionally. And there's no organization. So it's not going to happen. But folks, look at this. Look who has endorsed Graham Plattner. We already know Senator Elizabeth Warren, Senator Bernie Sanders, Democrat Senator Martin Heinrich from New Mexico, Democrat Senator from Arizona, Senator Ruben Gallego, Representative Ro Khanna, Democrat from California. Now, Senator Chuck Schumer, after spending $4 million he raised to try to defeat him, and Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. This is going mainstream. What is going mainstream? Again, the guy self-identifies as a communist and an Antifa super soldier. He's training for revolution and said in a clip on Fox News this morning that he intends to tear the entire system down. They're not fighting because they know their own base is going through a Marxist revolution, folks, on our soil. I never thought I'd see it. And folks, when you've lost Abby Phillips on CNN, a doctrinaire liberal, if there ever was one. And by the way, listen to the response of the young Democrat on her panel about Graham Plattner.
Now, if this were a Republican candidate who had a Nazi tattoo, covered it up when he was running for something, and had said all the things that he had said about black people, about women, about rape, etc., do you really think there's a world in which Democrats would be like, let's just let bygones be bygones? That's the past. Today's the present.
I think we're entering a new era, and we'll see what the base wants. We'll see who wins when the actual election happens. But for the past decade, Democrats have been unified by our opposition to Donald Trump. And now Graham Plattner has a forward-looking message. So
I always wondered, in these communist regimes where people gradually lose control of their country, how did they let that happen? I'm watching it. I get it now. You know what the central mistake I think they made is with watching all this I've just laid out? When the Marxists said they wanted to kill them, nobody believed them. It seemed impossible. And that's how 100 million people ended up dead in the last century. And Republicans, once again, just like them, not taking this seriously. That's insane.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops, and neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Insane thing number four. The Supreme Court ruling this week that Fox News estimates will eventually return 20 congressional seats from the Democrats who used an activist Supreme Court to steal them to the Republicans who rightfully should possess them. Now, to listen to Democrats lie about this ruling, you would have thought it was a civil rights atrocity.
Today's decision by this illegitimate Supreme Court majority strikes a blow against the Voting Rights Act.
The conservative majority on the Supreme Court took another step towards resurrecting the Jim Crow South.
It is an attack on a crown jewel of our democracy.
Dang, that sounds bad. But what actually happened? Well, for the first 200 years of our country, about 215 years really, we did what the Constitution said. You go out every 10 years in the census, you count how many people there are, and then you allocate the congressional districts according to where they are. Under that system, Justice Alito explained, there would be roughly 19 to 20 more Republicans elected to Congress, the system we've always had. But then in 1986, an activist Supreme Court decided, you know what, we're going to change it. We're going to mandate out of thin air, because we said so, that states have to draw majority-minority districts, 100% of whom elect Democrats. So as you heard Democrats assure black people they'd just been disenfranchised this week, no. Republican voters are the ones whose representation was stolen so Democrats could have seats. We were disenfranchised. Our civil rights were violated. Folks, 20 seats, do you realize that is a 40-point swing in congressional control? Yeah. Which makes us the most disenfranchised, persecuted people in the country. That once was black voters. That's true. Hasn't been that way for a long time. We have black presidents, and we have Tim Scott here in South Carolina, who's elected in a red state. Republicans are the most politically persecuted, censored, and disenfranchised voters. And the Supreme Court simply put it right this week. But I want to point something out to you. How simple this is to understand. You probably heard from Democrats that the Voting Rights Act is dead, that it's turned Section 2 into a dead letter. Well, the Voting Rights Act, which passed in 1965, pull it up. Pull up Section 2. You could do it. The text is online. Text search it. See if you can find the words district, redistricting, congressional map in there. Maybe gerrymandering? You can't, because it doesn't address it. So how on earth did a liberal Supreme Court that created that monstrous idea come up with it? They made it up. Think Supreme Court story time. And don't take my word for it, although you can text search it yourself, read it yourself if you want to online. Take Clarence Thomas's, black Supreme Court justice. He writes, in his opinion, I would go further and hold that Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act does not regulate districting at all, because it doesn't. What it does say is something all of us would agree upon. You can't have any standard practice or procedure that results in the denial or abridgment of the right to vote on account of race or color. It was specific, remember, this is 1965. It was specifically meant to address three things: poll taxes, tests they were trying to use to keep blacks from voting, and grandfathering to keep blacks from voting. And it was actually needed because of the long history, ironically, of Southern Democrats doing that to keep blacks from voting Republican. Anyway, at least 12 of these congressional seats that we've been given back our civil rights, despite the color of our skin and the way we vote, because we are, again, the most discriminated group of people in America, those of us who are Republican and just want to be free, 12 of those seats are in the South. And House Speaker Mike Johnson demanded that every one of those governors redistrict. In other words, go ahead and draw those districts out. They're unconstitutional anyway. And he said, no excuses. He probably already knows what South Carolina's pretend Republican legislature is going to do. He said, no excuses. Listen, in his state of Louisiana, he said, look, we had to cancel the primaries. We got to push them back. He said, that's okay. We're going to do that. And he said, we're not going to be able to hold the general election for Congress until December. And that's okay. We're going to do that. Well, already South Carolina leaders in our leaders, I use that lightly, they're liberals who run as Republicans because they have to win in this state. They'd be running as Democrats in another state. In the House and the Senate, folks, they've already blocked a Freedom Caucus measure in our South Carolina State House to move a plan forward in anticipation of this. They blocked it in committee. Now they're saying they just don't have time to pass it. So sorry. And they're also lying and saying, oh, that would result not in a 6-1 districts for South Carolina, but probably 4-3. Folks, that's absurd. Yes, we'd have to shovel some of the Democrat voters in Clyburn's gerrymandered district into other districts, but those districts can take it. When Sherry Biggs wins by 43% in the general election, we're fine. In fact, I'm going to attach a plan that would result in no less than plus 16 for Donald Trump in every congressional district in this state. So yes, they would become less Republican, but still uber red. And so our legislators are completely lying. Anything to keep Jim Clyburn in power. And folks, that's insane, because the reason we're stuck with these lame Democrats is because Trump endorsed them all, helping them to kill off conservatives in the primary. And they're now trying to send a Democrat to impeach Trump. You can't make this up. But this isn't the final word, folks. We're not done here in South Carolina. By the way, all they're doing right now, they could call special session. They're just going on summer break. They got nothing to do.
I'm Sarah Austin Jeunesse, The Moth's executive producer and longtime host of The Moth Podcast. Every week, we share true stories told live and without notes by real people from all walks of life. Stories about disastrous haircuts, May-December romances, photographing Pluto, fighting for justice, and so much more. Some stories make you laugh, some make you think, and many stay with you long after they're told. Discover the power of story. Follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
Insane thing number three, 7 million people are said to have died of COVID. We know the fakery rate is about 50%. Governor Kathy Hochul of New York personally admitted that. So call it about 3.5 million dead people. That's a huge kill. And you can do that if you're a bureaucrat in good Democrat standing, as Anthony Fauci did, colluding with our worst enemy on earth, the Chinese Communist Party, to create COVID via a company called Metabiota and an entity called Echo Health Alliance. They transferred the gain of function technology to make perfectly harmless viruses into killers. They transferred it to what the media calls the Wuhan lab, but that's not its official name. No, it's the official bioweapons laboratory, the People's Liberation Army. Folks, he should be in prison, and he knows it. And that's why he told everyone around him, Anthony Fauci, to go ahead and delete all of their conversations around those COVID grants, which is highly illegal. Anyway, one of those who made an art form of deleting his communication was a guy by the name of David Morenz, former senior advisor to Anthony Fauci. And he was just arrested. Good. The goal here is pretty transparent. They're going to flip him against Fauci, and they should, because there's still a murderous regime inside our government. You've probably seen Fauci dragged before Congress again and again to testify about his $6 million grant to Echo Health Alliance, which was then used to do work at the Wuhan lab. So our worst enemy on earth would, you know, definitely have the bioweapon it needed to kill us. All of it part of a longtime partnership between the Democrat Party and the Chinese Communist Party. Folks, I can't tell you how allied those two are, but that's another subject. Vanity Fair, you'll remember, broke a number of years ago that Fauci wasn't the only one that funded this. There was another grant from the Pentagon, remember this, for $52 million for the same thing, to support the same research. I put that in air quotes. Well, then we discovered there was another $52 million grant from USAID, probably one of the most evil organizations on the planet. An arm of the CIA, too. Thank God they shut it down. Another $52 million. Remember that one where they gave the grant for scientists to go deep into the bat caves in China and remove the viruses? They even appended a note to the grant that basically said, oopsie, yeah, wow, we didn't include any funding to make sure we didn't lose control of these viruses. Oh, darn. Well, who did that? Why did they do that? We still don't know the person's name at the Pentagon like we know Fauci's. Are they still there? Are they still plotting to kill millions more? Why did they do it? And so Rand Paul and now other Republicans are demanding the indictment of Fauci himself by May 11th. That'll be tricky since Joe Biden gave him a pardon of the size and length never before seen in U.S. history, except for Hunter Biden, who got a pardon that covered the exact same years, 2014 through 2025. How weird is that? Now, folks, they may try to get around the pardon because you're only supposed to constitutionally pardon like specific crimes. You have to say what they are. Joe Biden didn't say what they were. I wonder what the Democrats actually think Fauci's crimes were. And their excuse was, well, you know, we got to protect him from Donald Trump. Trump will, you know, be, you know, retributive and all of that. Why did you extend it back to 2014 then? Again, the same year Hunter Biden's pardon begins. I'll tell you why. What happened in the year 2014? The first grant was made by Rosemont Seneca, which was run by Hunter and John Kerry's son that very year. It was $30 million. We still don't know where they got it. That went to, guess where? Metabiota, the only private company allowed to do research in the Wuhan lab. Metabiota also partnered with Echo Health Alliance. I just find it super funny that both their pardons start that year. Now, maybe the point of this is just to get to the truth so we can find the killers inside our government who got away with mass murder here, whether through negligence or deliberate intent. I think it's deliberate intent, but whatever. I can't prove it, so I got to note that. Because remember the problem this creates for Fauci. Once you get the pardon, you cannot plead the fifth when you're put under oath. And if you lie again, well, that crime is past the pardon. We can put you in prison. So, folks, again, if we never get Fauci, maybe God will get him in the next life. We need to know how this happened. We need to know the network and who did it. And Morans, I'm hoping, will spill the beans. He's facing 51 years in prison. The mainstream media is naturally going wild and calling this persecution, which is how we know we're over the target. Insane thing number two, James Comey in court as a defendant. Folks, I can't tell you how satisfying it is to watch that humiliation. For his tweet, the picture of the seashells, 8647. And Comey's got kind of a problem here because he's going to have to face an actual American jury in the eastern part of North Carolina, not a post-American Marxist blue jury, like, say, in Virginia. Immediately, those on our side who always want to capitulate to the enemy, like Eric Erickson, said, Trump's gone too far. It looks like retribution. They weren't thinking. Folks, is the former head of the FBI as an official of that ranking of Comey's stature? The law that makes it very clear you cannot threaten to kill the president should be applied in the extreme to you. You should be under far more scrutiny and have much higher standards applied to you because you have so much power, so much credibility like Comey does. The law should be uber strictly enforced. But here's what everybody's missing about what Comey actually did here, and it'll chill you if you think about it. And I don't think Erickson did. James Comey right now is facing two serious RICO prosecutions for all the felonies that he committed in the Russia collusion hoax. One of those was filed in Virginia. A liberal judge tossed it out, not because of anything with the merits of the case, but because of how the Trump administration appointed the prosecutor. That will be refiled, but it's in Virginia. So it's a post-American, post-constitutional system. So we don't know. But a second part of the Russia collusion hoax RICO case actually has jurisdiction in Florida, which is an American justice system, not a blue Marxist system. And he's deeply in trouble there. Here's Roger Stone this week, former advisor to Donald Trump.
Do you think that this one sticks? I'm not sure, but he's facing far more serious charges of seditious conspiracy in the Southern District of Florida, where the documents declassified by Tulsi Gabbard absolutely prove without any question that he was party to a seditious conspiracy to remove a sitting president. Mm. And there is where he should really go down.
James Comey, who we know doesn't like Trump, wasn't exercising his First Amendment rights. You know, get rid of him. I don't want him. He's, folks, a guy under investigation for actual crimes by the Trump administration. It puts a whole new light on threatening to kill the president or encouraging the murder of the president. Let me put it this way. Do you know how Rudy Giuliani became so famous? It was when he was a prosecutor, he took on the mob. But the reason he became so famous as a prosecutor is he had to live with round-the-clock protection to survive it, and they openly threatened to kill him for prosecuting them. And he cleaned up the mob in New York and was so beloved because of those death threats and the fact that he risked his life to save and clean up New York. This is exactly like that. This is one of those things where, are we going to let deep state hacks threaten to kill the president to try to intimidate him, to try to intimidate his DOJ from the prosecution? Hell no, we're not going to do that. You can't live. You don't want to live in that country. Now, let's look at one more thing. Why did Comey do this? Let's look at that seditious conspiracy. Comey's facing going to prison for the rest of his life, which is exactly what his FBI and people who are still working with that same cabal of deep state hacks tried to do to Trump. About 300 of the years he was facing were because of that. So when you're Comey, okay, and Comey knows this, and you're putting that together because you're terrified. It's all you can think of that you're going to prison for the rest of your life because you know you're guilty. What you're saying to Trump is, look what we did to you. Look at how we were able to fabricate the cases against you, like the classified documents case. And Trump knows, and Comey knows, Trump knows the absolute insane and extent of the manipulation, the fabrication, the setup, the lying to the courts that the deep state went to at a felony level, perjury, that the deep state went to get Trump. Comey wants to create some doubt in Trump's mind. Wow, if I go forward with this prosecution of Comey, I mean, are they capable of killing me? Comey also hopes, after watching Butler and the golf course shooting, attempted shooting, to inspire one of these wannabe assassins to maybe kill Trump for him and end his problems. He obviously doesn't believe that J.D. Vance will pursue him the way he believes that Trump will. And so he knows they're out there. I mean, 25% of the Democrat base in that, poll everybody was talking about this week supports violence, to get their political way. He knows they're out there. And so when the former head of the FBI says, yes, we got to get rid of this guy, we got to kill this guy, that is enough to push that kind of mind over the edge and maybe take care of Comey's little problem. So this is unlike anything we've ever seen at the federal level in terms of death threats and motivation for them. We've never seen this, and this is why it's a fork in the road. This is why they had to arrest Comey. Insane thing number one. Had I recorded this in the beginning of the week, it would have certainly been that they tried to assassinate Donald Trump again. It would have been all about that photo that Cole Allen took right before he went downstairs looking like a badass, all armed up in the mirror with all of his weapons. I gotta say, he did look pretty handsome, pretty sexy. Like, kind of a badass dude. He took multiple versions of the photo, too, wanting to get the best angle so he'd look the handsomest, the most Luigi Mangione, because that's exactly what he was doing. This is the Luigi Mangione culture I've warned you about. This guy was modeling for the cameras. He wants to be the next one where women pack the courtroom, women wait outside, women do interviews on CNN talking about how hot he is, what a great revolutionary he is. You can see his entire real motivation in that picture. He wants to be Luigi Mangione. He wants to be on the lips of Hassan Piker, praised on the New York Times podcast. Yeah, that would have been my insane thing number one. Until Sean Curran, head of Secret Service, came out and said in a Fox News interview yesterday, everything went really well at the hotel, and he wouldn't change a thing. Wouldn't change the site again or the protocols or anything. No, the most insane thing this week is that Sean Curran still has a job. You know, he was the head of Trump's security detail at Butler, right? Yeah, that didn't go so well. You know, he was one of the top three in charge of that event. Yeah, the number one, who was then the head of the Secret Service, resigned in shame. But the other two, Sean Curran was one, were never punished. No, they were promoted, which is how you ended up with the absolutely absurd situation of the shooter pausing to update his manifesto in absolute awe at the incompetence of the Secret Service, calling them idiots, I think actually a pretty good descriptive term, who didn't even bother to check if anybody had checked in the night before or to secure the hotel from the inside. And this morning, released was the video camera of Cole Allen going around checking the exits, the cameras, doing all of his, you know, pre-assassination work, really. And a second, even more horrifying video that shows just how close not just President Trump and J.D. Vance, but his entire cabinet came to dying. I'd encourage you to go look at the video. There's nine complete morons standing right there at the metal scanner. The only one paying attention is the dog. He alerts on the door and the handler jerks him back. Nobody else is even paying attention. And all he had to do was bolt straight through the metal detector. Past, get this, you just got to see it, just it'll drop your jaw. Past nine people who barely had any reaction other than to cower in total terror. By the way, three of them were TSA agents. They're not even trained. And that three of the nine, that's who was stationed right outside that door. Folks, when you see how fast he went, how slow they went, and how close he got to that door, I'm telling you, Trump came within seconds and everybody else around him of being mowed down. But Sean Curran, head of the Secret Service, who Trump's not firing and praised this week, says he's not going to change anything, thinks they did a great job. Folks, I'm going to put this in the kindest way, okay? Because you need to get mentally ready for this. Trump's not going to make it to the end of his term because this assassination attempt rang the dinner bell. That's what Cole Allen accomplished. Cole Allen may actually have gotten Trump killed in the long term. I mean, God forbid. But here's why. When you have his complete moron, Secret Service director, going out there and saying, no, we're going to change anything. We love the security we're doing. Well, it's absolutely fine. What that tells all the people who want to kill Trump, and that list is long. Maduro loyalists, Trende Aragua gang members, Cuban intelligence. He killed over 99 of them in the Maduro raid. The Iranian IRGC, definitely China. The Houthis, remember, we completely annihilated their leadership last year, just blew them away in a field. Any number of ISIS and Al-Qaeda terrorists, because he's killed their leaders as well in his first and second term. I mean, the list is so long. Folks, we have cartels putting bounties on border agents' heads. What do you think they'll do to Trump? And I think all these groups who before kind of thought, well, you know, I'm afraid to try, they're starting to rethink that calculus, all of them. So is every future Luigi Mangione wannabe lunatic on the left who would love to kill Trump but probably figured they couldn't get close enough. Now they know they can get close enough. Folks, understand I mean this with love. I get heat when I say this on my show, but I'm hoping other shows somewhere out there will begin to repeat it because a lot of people use me for show prep across the country, repeat it, and there should be some shame, absolute shame at the utter failure of Trump to run this agency. He's failed completely, and it will cost him his life. He's not going to make it to the end of his term at this rate because, again, Cole Allen just rang the dinner bell. What they learned is the security hasn't changed one iota since that lunatic who served in Ukraine was allowed to take a pot shot at Trump weeks after Butler, with, once again, the site having been completely unpre-surveilled. What's so remarkable about this is that the Secret Service uses surprise to keep Trump safe. In other words, they don't do the whole site inspection if he's dropping in somewhere that's unannounced, right? Figuring no one would know. This event was so widely publicized, and yet there was no officially approved guest list, no ID to get in. People went into the pre-party with nothing more than a screenshot of their, you know, of their invitation and were allowed to stay. Greg Gutfeld, the comedian from Fox News, was caught on camera remarking how idiotic the security was. This was, he was at the event and he was joking about how two female Secret Service agents were holding the door open for him. He said they're, you know, basically they're like bellhops. He couldn't believe the security situation. If I'm watching these videos, Iranian IRGC terrorists, believe me, are watching these videos. Look, folks, I feel about this like you feel when your teenager is like, you know, an hour due home past their curfew and you keep calling their phone and you can't get them and you just picture them. Oh my gosh, they've crashed their car. You know, they're no longer with us. This is terrifying. They walk through the door and you run up to them and you hug them and you say, oh, thank the Lord, you're okay. And then you slap them and you say everything that means anything to me. And in this case, the nation is wrapped up in you. No one can carry this forward. What you're doing, it's over if you're gone. And folks, at this point, after this, the IRGC, the Iranians, are nuts if they don't try to take him out. Let me tell you why. They requested J.D. Vance, not Marco Rubio, as their negotiator because it's known J.D. Vance is violently opposed to this Iran war. He's been on the record about it before he was the vice president. And go look at the videos of him being asked, do you still not support it now? He sounds incredibly passively lukewarm. If I were the IRGC, they're nuts not to take a run at him. And he won't stop. And Trump is even on TV volunteering. He's not wearing a bulletproof vest. Great.
Is there talks about you potentially wearing a bulletproof vest moving forward, given you have now been shot at so many times?
I don't know if I can handle looking 20 pounds heavier. I've been asked about that. And I guess it's something you consider. In one way, you don't like to do it because you're giving in to a bad element. And so, I don't know. But I have been asked about it.
How nervous are you about it happening again, another assassination attempt?
I don't think about it.
I believe him. And that's why he's not thinking about the nuclear level scripts by Curran. Again, the most insane thing this week and for a while is that he still has a job. After announcing to the world, nothing's going to change.
Battleground America with Tara Servatius. Please subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Share with friends, family, and other free thinkers. Thanks for listening.
The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.